I'm Christopher Lydon, flying over the Eurozone with Mark Blyth, the Sean Connery version of the quickest draw in economic politics. This is Open Source from the Watson Institute at Brown University, an American conversation with global attitude, we call it. Mark Blyth, the New York Times is worried about contagion, catastrophe. Can you see it on the map down there?
Hi, Chris. It's nice to be back, and I'm going to tell you exactly what I told you before because nothing's changed.
Come on.
It's just that the rest of the world has caught up. I mean, really, that's it. We were talking about contagion 6 months ago. I was writing about contagion at the end of 2009. I mean, this is what happens when you have banking crises. Let's go through the math again. It's really simple. Big banks go over-levered and they say, don't worry, we've got a nice free insurance policy on the public. They'll have to bail us. So we do, because if we don't, there's no money in the ATMs and things get really nasty. The idea is that eventually, and rather quickly, if you throw a lot of money at them, you save the system and the growth comes back. The problem was the growth didn't come back for reasons we can go into. And it all ended up in the balance sheet of the state. Now, the United States state has pretty low debt, generally speaking. And that went up by 76%, is now sitting at around 80% debt to GDP. European states, because they tax and spend more, had more debt to start with. Consequently, they end up even more levered, so you end up with much bigger debts lying around the place. Now, if you're growing, it's not a problem. But guess what? You're not going to grow. And why are you not going to grow? Because the economic policy to restore growth is everybody has to be austere. They're all going to cut their way to growth. And as we've said before, if you cut your way to growth all at the same time, you're simply making the debt bigger because the economy gets smaller. And
they haven't got your message on austerity, though, Mark.
They are not listening. The Germans are not listening. And that's basically where the problem starts and ends at the moment in terms of restoring growth. But the bigger problem is this. If you run this out, you end up with a massive increase in government debt and no growth to pay for it. The markets will start to freak out. Now, one way of telling the story, and the way that most people, myself included, were thinking about this was, Greece goes, people have to cover the losses in Greece, they dump Portugal, then you dump Ireland, and then it comes back to somewhere big. That's the runaround, the bank runaround, the bond market. But you don't even need that. If the markets get to the point where they're being totally schizophrenic, which they are just now, they want to have fiscal consolidation because they're worried about the debt, but then they want growth. So you give them fiscal consolidation, and guess what? It hurts growth. So then they say, oh my God, there's less growth, there's more debt, what do? We'll give these people a downgrade. Oh, they got a downgrade, what do? Now we have to sell the bonds. You can get a contagion mechanism going without actually kicking Greece out. So you spend all this time squeezing the Greeks to death to make sure they don't leave the Eurozone to stop contagion, and guess what? You've got contagion anyway.
And now Italy's in the soup.
Italy's in the soup, absolutely. And here's the funny thing. There's nothing wrong with Italy.
Meaning?
Meaning that Italian private debt is lower on average than practically any other developed country. The public debt's always been big. Guess what? It was big 10 years ago. It was pretty much the same. 10 years ago, it didn't matter. Now it matters. Why? Because everybody's worried about the Eurozone as a whole shrinking with this level of debt at the same time as the world economy is not growing. And the real reason behind this, it started as a banking crisis, it will end as a banking crisis. It's about all of the banks in Europe being seriously over-levered, holding lots and lots of dodgy periphery debt. And if those assets go bad, then those banks go bang. Now, here's the problem. The United States basically is about 40% to 50% of GDP as the net worth of the banks. In Europe, it's several multiples of GDP when you add it all together. You can bail any one bank. You cannot bail the system of banks. It's too big. So when everyone's talking about this big bag of magic euros called the European Financial Stability Fund, when you could put 250 in it, you lever it up, you turn it into a monoline, you turn it into a CDO, you do all these leverage tricks that we learned in the mortgage crisis don't work, but that's still the design. You can end up with a trillion in there. It's still not going to be enough to bail the German and French banking systems if they go bang. So when we're worried about Italy's AAA and France's AAA, we're not worried about their ability to pay the bills. Growth has Italy has what's called a rollover risk and growth problem. There's no doubt about that. But there's nothing fundamentally wrong with the Italian economy. There's nothing fundamentally wrong with France's ability to pay the bills. But neither of them will be able to bail out the entirety of the euro banking system. And that's why it's all freaking out.
Okay. Village Idiot has two questions. One, when you talk about contagion, I see ATMs that don't have anything left, a run in the banks, and real panic. A collapsing economy. Is this part of the mix?
It depends on how the ECB reacts, and the ECB is a fundamentally stupid institution, so it probably will do the worst possible thing, which is to not add as much liquidity as possible to prevent that happening. So don't rule it out. It doesn't necessarily mean that. Here's what it means. Imagine you do the classic bank run whereby Greece decides, we've had enough of this, we're out. And if you haven't got your banks to build up what's called their capital buffers, their reserves to absorb that shock, then there's a chance the bank goes bang. At that point, the state can either nationalise the banks and flood the markets with money in order to stabilise it and keep the ATMs going, or alternatively, it can let them fail. And the argument for letting them fail in the United States was, well, you know, you got 158 million people in the labour market, 72% of people living paycheck to paycheck, and 55 million handguns. Go do the math. You got a slightly different problem in Europe, less handguns, but already more unemployed people in a more sclerotic economy. So you're going to do a great deal of damage either way. Is it necessarily a catastrophe? One way or another, you're going to have to deal with the fact that these banks in Europe make the leverage ratios of American banks look like something out of the Capra movie about Christmas. They're huge. They're massively over-levered. And they're chock-a-block full of crappy assets.
They don't have a big central bank for the whole continent.
The way you got with the European Central Bank isn't a central bank. It's a currency board with an inflation target. Let me explain what that is. A big central bank does something very important called a lender of last resort function. Right. So let me give you an example of this. Remember how Bloomberg a few months ago got that Freedom of Information Act and pulled all the stuff on where the Fed had been putting their money, and everyone got outraged about the fact that it turned out there was more than $700 billion. It was $1.3 trillion, and they were giving money to BNP Paribas and the Bank of Scotland and all that. And what was that all about? That's outrageous. Well, here's the deal, folks. It's called being the global hegemon. It's called being the lender of last resort, the global counterparty of last resort. Because if we don't do that, the whole system goes down. And while that's bad for them, it's just as bad for us. So when you're the biggest kid on the block, you have to take the biggest responsibility for the risks. The problem in Europe is that Germany is the regional hegemon. It's the biggest kid on the block, and it refuses to take responsibility for the risk. It will not add liquidity. It will not act as a lender of last resort, and it expects nothing more than simple deflation of wages and prices in the periphery is somehow magically going to solve the problem. And as I like to put it this way, you can slash wages in Greece all you want. It's not going to make the supply of sandy beaches, rice and olive oil any more competitive against BMWs.
But why doesn't Europe have a Fed? Why doesn't that big economy have a bank of last resort?
Because it's not one big economy. It's a series of very different economies that happen to share a currency for no apparent reason other than political ambition. Many of them have nothing to do with each other in terms of what they produce, their business cycles, how they're coordinated, how they're governed, what institutions constitute them. They couldn't be more different. And the idea that simply by either laying down rules about debt breaks or levels of debt to GDP, that somehow they're all going to converge and we can all, in a sense, become Germany, an export-oriented, out-of-the-Eurozone specialist in high-tech manufacturers, is simply nonsense. Yet that seems to be what the policy recommendation ultimately resorts to.
Okay, Village Idiot's second big question is one of the happiest big developments of my lifetime, the integration of Europe, is that at risk here as a political thing? I mean, leave the euro aside. Is sort of war-free, civilized, grown-up Europe at risk?
I wish I knew. I mean, you know, you're asking me to predict something.
We ask you everything, Mark.
Yeah, I know, but really that one's unfair. It can play out anyway. At the moment, you have a German populace which has begun to recognize, whether it's real or not, that the Italians and the Greeks and everyone else are just lazy. Well, that's not true. Go to OECD.org stats and just simply look up hours worked, and you'll find out something shocking. Your average Greek works longer than your average German. But that doesn't matter, because that's
short
not what's
getting played.
Short
of vacation, too, probably.
Well, regardless, people are working everywhere. They're working in different economies in different ways. And the idea that they're all lazy. Now, you've got the other side of it. You've got the situation whereby the Greek Prime Minister turned around and said, maybe we should actually ask the Greek people if 10 years of austerity, 120% of debt, and massive unemployment for a decade is actually something they're willing to put up with. We are, after all, a democracy. And what happened was the EU leadership freaked out and parachuted in a central bank technocrat to run their government. We just deposed Berlusconi. Berlusconi may be a clown, but he was democratically elected by the Italian people to be their clown. We've now stuck in Mario Monti instead. So what we've done is we've deposed two democracies. And you're asking me if Europe is at threat? Europe is already at threat if you're in the business of deposing democracies.
Is Sarkozy in trouble?
Sarkozy's not in trouble because the French isn't. The French economy isn't in trouble. The French banks are in trouble. How you deal with that is an entirely different question. There's this elision that happens between the health of the economy and the public debt. And the real question should be, the real relationship should be looking at, is the health of the economy, the risk posed, the systemic risk posed by the overexposure of these banks to gross public debt in the Eurozone. It's about the banks. It's not about the sovereigns. We used to live in a world, not so long ago, when it was the case whereby banks came along and bailed sovereigns. Now the number one job of a sovereign is to provide free public insurance and bailouts to banks.
If you put it to a new vote, let's have a United States of Europe with a completely integrated political and banking system. How would it come out, and then what would it tell you?
Usually you do referenda in Europe to stop things happening. That's why you have them. So you put it to the public with a pretty safe bet that they're going to say no. And the Greeks were in a classic example of this. Would you like to have 10 years of deflation and most of the smart people leaving the country and to be left with no tax base? No thanks. So it was a bargaining chip. If you were to say at this point, let's sign up to what Merkel wants, more Europe. Well, what does that mean? It means balanced budget amendments. It means debt breaks. It means an end to any type of counter-cyclical fiscal management. It means an end to an active fiscal policy. It assumes that the whole world can work as Germany, which is basically a giant exporter that runs a permanent surplus against the rest of the world. So what they're saying is that we run a permanent surplus against Europe. Europe needs to become so competitive that they can join us, and then we'll run a permanent surplus against the rest of the world. This is madness.
Why?
You can't run a permanent surplus. Somebody has to be importing for somebody to be exporting. We can't all export to Mars.
China does.
Who's going to buy all the BMWs? China does, precisely because America gives it the credit to. Germany was able to sell all its stuff to Southern Europe precisely because it gave it the credit to. Now they've stopped the credit lines. That's the problem. What they should be doing is turning on the taps to provide credit, not to continue to buy things they can't afford, but to basically allow enough liquidity in the economy to stop the banks seizing up. What's happening is the banks are seizing up. What we had in the repo market in 2007 is going on in the European banking markets right now. It's going to end the same way.
Aren't we back at Mark Blyth square one, why austerity isn't going to work?
Yeah, but austerity is really just part of this now. I mean, you know, the stupidity of austerity, as I see it, that we all have this idea that we can all cut our way to growth simultaneously, is simply a trigger for these wider relationships, which are zero-sum against each other as well. So the idea we can all be in a surplus, the idea that we can all cut our way to growth, the idea that the EU can run a permanent trade export surplus with the rest of the world. I mean, this is all just nonsense. I mean, literally nonsense. It makes no sense.
But remind us, what would work better?
For somebody to be a creditor, somebody has to be a debtor. We can't all be creditors. It's really kind of simple. When somebody, well, there's too much debt out there. Well, you have to remember that that debt is somebody else's asset. That's where they get their income stream from, and that's what they use to buy stuff. So we've got into this mental fixation where it's like, debt bad, saving good, exports good, imports bad. And it's kind of trying to balance an equation by only looking at one side of the equation. It's stupid.
If you're Germany and Greece wants a bailout, remind me what a non-austerity deal would look like.
Well, the austerity, see, again, let's not generalize from Greece. There's no doubt about the fact that Greece was screwing the pooch, boiling the books and doing everything else wrong. But no one else was in that position. All that happened was there was a banking crisis across the world and states levered up to protect their banks and their debt levels went up. The growth disappeared. Consequently, people holding the debt said, whoops, what's happening is your nominal rate of growth has fallen behind the rate of growth on your interest payments. You're going to have, if you don't take care of it now, a solvency crisis eventually down the line. In the meantime, you've got a liquidity problem because I'm not going to buy any more of your bonds or roll them over. That's where we are. It has nothing to do with what was going on, the shenanigans that was going on in Greece. this idea that, like, well, look at Greece. Well, I'll end up like Greece. It's the same thing. This is all garbage. Greece was a special case. Let's talk about the rest of the Eurozone. What you have there is a growth problem. And the way you get a growth problem solved is not by cutting the hell out of the only part of the economy which is still spending, i.e. the government. Because when people are in debt, they pay back debt. Private sector deleveraging is a fact. If you compound it with public sector deleveraging, you simply shrink the economy. So you have less tax receipts, so you have to spend proportionately more of them paying back your debt. It just doesn't work.
I don't know why I have to be reminded, but I hear again, and it convinces me, the case against austerity. Thank you. Last question. The catastrophe we worry about is one that would spill over on us. What's the risk in all this euro mess to the USA?
The thing that worries me is the thing that's hardest to get real data, numbers on, information on. And you remember how the crisis played out in 2008? And nobody, the Bear Stearns are going bust. Well, Bear Stearns are going bust. All right, so you basically arrange for them to be bought out for a dollar a share or something like this. And then Lehman Brothers, like, that's it. No more bailouts, no more anything like that. We're not going to sell them. Nope, that's it. They go to the wall. That's it. Bang. And suddenly the whole world woke up and there was a thing called a credit default swap. And we said, what's that? Well, it's an insurance policy that private actors give to each other. Oh, yeah, how does that work? Well, basically, you know, if you're worried about Lehman failing, you could buy Lehman stock and then you buy a credit default swap. And that means that if the stock goes to zero, the guy who sold you the credit default swap has to pay you back the value of the swap. And that could be many millions, billions of dollars. Really? Oh, that's awesome. So basically, it's free public insurance. Yeah. What's the backstop? Nothing. I'm sorry, what? Yeah, basically, you have everybody pretends to be an insurance company, but they actually have no insurance fund. They're just taking in the premiums and then marking them to market and then calling it a bonus. You've got to be shitting me. No, that's really what happened. Okay, here's the worry for Europe. Up until very recently, the European market... Well, actually, this is still going on. The European bank funding market doesn't work the same way as the United States. It works on short-term funding. The way that you get your short-term funding, massive volumes of it, is you go to big pools of money. Those big pools of money are things like American money market funds. So American money market funds were buying short-term European bank debt. However, these guys are very, very risk-averse because they don't want to break the buck and they work on really thin margins and high volumes. So what do they want to do? They want to get rid of it. So they started to dump the European bank debt. That's where the initial, oops, the banks are in trouble in Europe comes from. Now, you see those big banks that we bailed back in 2008 in the United States? Guess what they've been doing? They've been doing what was it called GM Global did. They've been not only buying European debt, they've been sending out credit default swaps against big European banks. So what that means is they're betting that the European states will somehow, regardless of the funds involved, bail those banks and stop them failing. They're betting that Lehman is impossible in the Eurozone. Well, if it's not impossible, suddenly all of those credit default swap contracts come due. And all those American banks that are sitting there on public bailouts with lots and lots of public money holding them up will suddenly be very, very much in the red again. So that's when it hits us back through the CDS market and through those secondary exposures. And as to how big those things are, you can get some numbers out of stress tests and things, but you don't really have an idea. Good example of this, when you if you'd said to someone just before Lehman fell, what's the consequence of Lehman failing? There's no way they would say it would be a $2 trillion global event. And that was one bank that brought us that.
Yeah.
What happens if the whole French banking system goes down?
Yes.
Well, I don't know, but it's not going to be nice, and that's when it comes back to hit you.
Mark Blythe, you're building a big play-by-play file of the history of this Euro story, and it's going to go on through the winter and spring. What should we be noticing? Who can we believe? Who should we be reading for the next round?
Well, the thing is, everybody's got a story as to what's happening. I'm telling you one story I find plausible. I have no idea if I'm right either. Because what you're looking at is an incredibly complex phenomena driven by markets which are behaving with short-term schizophrenia at best. They want austerity and growth simultaneously. You're looking at governments whose speciality is to kick the can down the road. Unfortunately, it now looks like they've actually run out of road, no matter how hard they kick the can. So this thing can continue on for 6 months. It might be over in 6 days. We simply don't know. So looking forward to this one, how long is it going to last? I have absolutely no idea. I'm surprised it's lasted as long as it has, to be perfectly honest.
Don't go far. We may need you in 6 days. Thank you. As ever, Mark Blythe.
Always a pleasure.
Ben Mandelkern produced and edited this conversation. It isn't over until you feed back on our website, radioopensource.org. I'm Christopher Leiden. Thank you for being part of the conversation.